Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Mother's Day, one and all, and welcome to Web Sleuth Radio. Web Sleuth Radio brought to you by Borax. Just what the hell is Borax anyway, and why do we need it? I don't know. I'm really tired and very, very loopy, so forgive me if I say things that are not very tasteful, or if I'm crude, or if I don't make any sense. In other words, my normal show. Time for the legal stuff. The opinions on this show are those of the hosts and the guests. Web Sleuth Radio is a complete and separate entity from websleuth.com LLC and should not be viewed as the same thing because we're not. Websleuth.com is an LLC. That's a limited liability company or limited liability corporation, while Web Sleuth Radio is an HHNASDBS LLC. That stands for Host Has No Assets, So Don't Bother Suing LLC. Two totally different companies. Oh, it's going to be a crazy show. I can feel it already. Now, Web Sleuth, the forum, has been going down a lot lately, and I know it's driving everybody crazy. It's making us crazy, too, and I want to apologize. We are working on it. We have our amazing adenoid on top of things, and I'm telling you, the man is a genius. He can work miracles. So as soon as we find out what it is, we will get it fixed. I know as much as you do. We don't know why it's doing these crazy things. Just be patient and bear with us, and it will be fixed. Okay, tonight they brought us into the world, and sometimes they take us out. Mothers who kill their kids, and throughout history, there's been some very freaky stories. From Mary Beth Tinning, who killed nine of her children before authorities realized that, hey, not all these kids were being killed by SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. No. To LaShondra Armstrong, who recently drove into the Hudson River, killing herself and three of her four children. Look, let's face it. As moms, we have all lost our tempers. Our kids can push our buttons. Whether it was when my son, when he was 5 years old, yelling at me and calling me a big fat Mozart head, to me losing my mother's pearl ring when I was seven, moms have always been angry at kids. But what in the name of all that is holy makes them go over the edge to do these crazy, horrific things? Now, many times, their mental illnesses can be traced back to trauma in their childhoods. When it was revealed that Susan Smith had been continually sexually abused by her stepfather from an early age, we then began to understand the fact that she was deeply troubled. Now, this realization did not and will never excuse what she or what other mothers have done to their children. But it is extremely important to find out why mothers kill, to understand the reasoning behind it, so we can learn how to prevent it. Tonight, we have two experts. We welcome forensic psychologist Dr. Glenn Lipson. Dr. Lipson will join us in just a little bit. And first off, we're going to true crime author Donna Kaufman. Donna, welcome, my dear.
Thank you, Tricia, and happy Mother's Day to you. I know that you are one of the good ones.
Well, you're so sweet. Thank you. My son gave me the cutest card today. It was something about, you know, you're a great mom, you know, and I love you and thank you for everything. By the way, I think I'm turning into a zombie. I have no idea what that means, but I think that's my boy just writing weird stuff to his mom. I love it. I love it. Donna,
thank you for killing him.
I know, exactly. I'll tell you what, that day when he called me a big fat Mozart head, it was really funny about 10 minutes after, but at the time I'm like, I didn't even know where he came up with that, you know, but he was mad because I wasn't letting him do something with his friend and he just screamed, you big fat Mozart head. That's pretty creative, actually. Pretty creative.
Yep.
Donna, you've been involved in studying and writing and involved in many aspects of true crime, and you've seen the horrific things that mothers do to their own children. And tonight we're going to explore some of those. We're also going to talk about the crazy moms out there, like Tanning Bed Mom and Octo Mom. We'll get to those a little bit later in the show because we do have a few updates on that. But let's talk about Susan Smith. We brought her up, and she was the woman who drove her two sons into the lake and then claimed that a black man had hijacked her car, had carjacked her, and took her two children. And we all believed her, everybody believed her. And then we found out that she was in love with the owner of the son's owner, the plant owner, his son, where she worked. And she wanted to marry him, and he didn't want kids. And so we think that was kind of what kind of started really driving her over the edge. But it goes back further than that, because we found out that her deeply religious, very conservative, well-respected in the business community stepfather had been sexually abusing her for years. And I think a lot of times this type of behavior traces back to sexual abuse. What can you tell us about Susan Smith?
Well, Susan Smith, just to remind people, this is in South Carolina, Union, South Carolina, in 94, she put her two sons, 14-month-old Alex and 3-year-old Michael, in the back seat in their little seats, baby seats, and pushed the car into the John D. Long Lake, which was a recreational area for fishermen in the area. The car went under. She held her ears so she wouldn't have to hear the cries. And it took something like, and then she went to the press and said that she was carjacked by somebody, a black man. And for about 9 days, people thought that, you know, her story was true. It turns out it wasn't, and she ended up confessing. She is in jail now and is not likely to be paroled until she's much older. But the interesting thing, as you said, is that there was a mental defense there, mental illness defense, which was very important. I think also Casey Anthony, who, as we know, was acquitted for child murder, read the files, or at least read up on Susan Smith, to concoct her own molestation defense. But what Susan Smith had was recorded documentation of the things that happened to her during her life. And teachers and her family knew about these incidents, which include lots of death around her. When she was 3 years old, her father and the mother and the father were splitting up. She was very close to her father. There were two sons in the family as well. He came to the house with a gun and said he was going to kill himself and the mom in front of the children. Mom talked him out of it. He went home, and after a while, he did shoot himself to death. Shortly thereafter, maybe 4 months later, Mom took an overdose and almost died. So Susan had a history of suicidal ideations and actual suicidal attempts for many, many years during her elementary and high school period. Mm-hmm. And this was documented by a lot of shrinks that she went to and people that she told, unlike Casey Anthony, who the only person that she talked to about the molestation was her in letters from prison.
We'll get into Casey Anthony, too, but I just want to remind everybody, because that she is, to me, the ultimate of evil. Susan Smith was evil, but there was a mental illness there. I don't think there is so much with Casey as there is a personality disorder. But I think you're right. I think Casey Anthony read up on Susan Smith, and boom, all of a sudden she has the exact same type of things. But Susan Smith legitimately had some very traumatic, horrific moments throughout her childhood. But I'm sorry, go ahead. We're talking with Donna Kaufman about mother to kill.
Her stepfather on many occasions admitted having molested her, and then, you know, he would get treatment, the whole family would be in counseling, and he'd do it again. I mean, he just couldn't resist.
She got
knocked up when she had an abortion, I think, when she was 16, mm-hmm. and she had a history of getting pregnant, and finally she snatched David Smith, who was a good catch, and they quickly had two kids. They fought. He was brutal to her. He beat her up on more than one occasion. She was very promiscuous. They both had tons of other affairs that they rubbed each other's noses in. Mm-hmm. And the guy that she was trying to impress, who was considered the good catch in town, she got a letter from him where he said, I just don't want to be a father at this point in my life, and, you know, I'm breaking up with you. And then she, to try to make things better, went to him and said, would it help if I told you I was having an affair with your father?
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
I didn't know
that. And
yeah.
We're not even sure if it's true or if she made that up.
Right.
At some point, she backed away and said, oh, that was a joke. But whatever happened, it didn't lure him back into her arms. And that's when she put the kids in the car and did what she did. So it's a really sad case. Let me give you some stats, if I might,
please.
About what these kinds of cases show. Kids under the age of 10 are murdered in this country at a rate of about 2 a day. And of those two, half of the kids are killed before their first birthday. Most of the kids are killed by their bio parents or a male acquaintance of the mother. 3% of kids die at the hands of a stranger. So when we see these cases of missing kids and we wonder, gee, why are they looking at the families? Here's why.
That's why.
3%. Bio moms account for approximately 30% of the child homicides. That's about 300 a year, or a mom killing a kid about every day and a half. And, of course, as we know, they don't often stop with just one child.
Right.
They get their money's worth. And it's a terrible thing. It's probably the hardest job there is in the world to raise good kids and to come out of your child intact and your sanity intact. And there are a couple reasons. We'll get into this with Dr. Lipson as well. But there are three triggers that seem to be the main thing that sets off mothers: lingering postpartum depression,
right,
revenge for the abuse by a husband or the male in the family,
mm-hmm,
or a twisted way of protecting the kids, such as taking the kids to heaven,
yeah,
some kind of religious ideation. So, and the other thing I'll add is, when I was finishing my Casey Anthony chapter in the book From Crime Scene to Courtroom, which I wrote with Dr. Cyril West, forensic pathologist and lawyer, I did this was in July of last year, so I'm not sure if it has changed any, but I did a report on all the women on death row.
Mm-hmm.
Of those at the time, there were 14 who were there for killing their children.
That's
of them
a lot.
Were killing their nephews or nieces.
Uh-huh.
One was killing two grandchildren. So that's besides the 14.
That's a very unusual stat. We're talking with Donna Kaufman about mothers who kill. And I'm wondering how many, if the comparison is the same for men on death row, if they get death for killing their children, and at what rate is the percentage the same? I don't know. I bet it's higher in mothers because, let's face it, we all are just beyond appalled and disgusted when a mother kills her child. I mean, we are when the father does it too, but I'm guessing, and I don't have anything to base this on other than just my gut feeling, that the percentage of men who are on death row for killing their children, I bet that percentage is lower than the women because the...
I don't know. I certainly know of a Susan Smith exact duplication of a Susan Smith crime where a dad strapped his two or three kids into the back of a car, pushed it into the water, and got no publicity at all. It happened on an Indian reservation, was pretty much covered up.
I remember that.
There isn't the kind of coverage, but remember, most of these cases of child killings where moms are involved do not go to death row. And there are not all the states in the union are not, in fact, I'd say most states do not have the death penalty or do not
mm-hmm.
give it out like Texas.
Florida.
Florida, California, you know, there are some perennials in there. Illinois has just overturned, and Virginia, you know, is up and down with it. So there are some that just don't apply.
Well, exactly.
And the mental health issue is the primary reason for keeping women off death row when children are killed.
Let me ask you, Donna, you've mentioned postpartum depression, and I know when that term is mentioned, it gets a lot of eye rolling. And people will say, oh, that's just an excuse, that's just a crutch. And here's the thing, it's very difficult because you want to say, well, yes, it is an excuse, but I'm not saying it's legitimate that it's okay to kill your kids if you have postpartum depression, but if you have postpartum psychosis like Andrea Yates and nothing is done, you know, it's not right to put someone like that on death row or in prison for the rest of their lives because they were hearing voices. If you have never experienced being around a person who is truly so deeply mentally ill that they're hearing voices, it's hard to comprehend that they literally don't understand what they're doing. And as in the case with Andrea Yates, the woman who drowned her 5 children, I am still furious that Rusty Yates is not in prison, because he should be. I mean, the things that he made her do, and he beat her down emotionally to where, you know, there was nothing left of her. She was a nub of a human being. She was homeschooling the kids in a bus, and there was no room. And
converted Greyhound bus.
Four
children and 5 when she had her 5th child. She was on Haldol. She came off the drugs so that he could get her pregnant again.
And he wanted kids. Because he thought that was his God-given duty to have children.
Mm-hmm. Ignoring the fact that even before they married, she had emotional and mental problems that were documented. And that was a really interesting case. I remember being at a forensic seminar in, I don't know, maybe 8 years ago, and George Parham, who was her attorney, was giving a lecture, and the psychiatrist who he was lecturing with was Lisa Van Susteren, who is Greta's sister, mm-hmm. which is kind of interesting because Greta's a Scientologist and they don't believe in the psychiatrist, and her sister is a very psychiatrist from Washington, D.C., and I always thought, gee, I wonder what their Thanksgiving is like. But they really laid it out, and at the time they were trying to get her into a mental institution rather than a jail. Mm-hmm. And let me go over what happened in that case if anyone dialing in from the moon and they don't know the facts. This happened in Houston in June 2001, and she had 5 children, all under the age of 7, and all with biblical names. Mary was the baby. I think she was 6 months old. Noah, John, Paul, and Luke. Mm-hmm. Methodically, she drowned them in a bathtub, and they then put them in a bed and covered, you know, lined them up by height under the covers as if they were just asleep. She called the police. She called 911. She said she needed police. And she was very evasive about what she needed them for, and she wouldn't say.
Mm-hmm.
So they did send the police officer, and what he saw was a tub full of water and feces, and then he went in the bedroom and saw the children. And by that time, Rusty and his mother had joined. Rusty had worked for the Johnson Space Center.
Right.
And after she called 911, she called Rusty and said, get home. And it was like the first time she had ever been so demonstrative with him. So he just ran over there and saw, you know, that horror show. He has, over the years, said, I can't blame her. She was psychotic. Well, you knew that before you knocked her up the first time.
Exactly.
And you knew every single time when the doctors would say she needs to be on these really heavy-duty medicines, mm-hmm. would take her off the medicine so he could make her pregnant again. And as you said, they lived in a bus, a Greyhound bus, that they where she homeschooled the children, he would go off to work, and she would be stuck with those kids.
And you have to understand, people have to understand that, you know, it's hard. I mean, and our moms did it. But damn it, my mother was depressed, and she would never admit it, but she was home all day with the kids. And when you get to go out to work and be in the world, that makes a big difference in your mental health. You can handle it better, you know. So if you're home all day and you don't ever get a chance to go out into the world, like Andrea Yates did not ever have that opportunity. When Rusty Yates got home, he had to be served. You know, he would never come home and say, here, let me take the kids. You go out with your friends. Never happened.
Right.
You know, it was, by God, he had to be served. He was the man, and that's all there was to it. And that's why
he was raised Catholic, and he was an evangelical. His family had been. And so she had to conform to his religious views. Then as they grew as a couple, they became part of this charismatic church, and this preacher, who I think has dirty hands as well as anyone in this case, lectured her privately about what a terrible mother she was and how she was Satan. So these things were coming from an authority figure in her mind, and, you know, she was just hopeless and broken down. The other thing is she had audio and visual hallucinations, which are not helped by the drug cocktail that she was on. She did see a number of different drug pharmacologists and psychiatrists, and they all would lecture Rusty about what, you know, her bad condition, and she would periodically go into the hospital for a while, and then because of insurance and whatever, she would be considered stable and released back to the hell that she was, you know, trying to.
And it was a living hell. It was.
Commit suicide, including stabbing herself in her neck.
She did. When did that happen?
I think that happened early on. Maybe, I can't remember if it was before or after she got together with him. But, you know, she, again, documentation. She was, there's plenty of documentation here. So, the one other thing that happened during that trial, because it became a question of, is she mentally ill or is she evil? And this is a death penalty case, and, you know, what area of the law do we apply to this case? So one of the experts was a guy named Dr. Park Dietz. He was a prosecution expert.
Oh, yes. Oh, this is a great story. You people got to listen to this. This is great.
Okay, I can't wait to hear. Oh, wait.
You're telling it, not me.
Okay. So anyway, he was testifying that where she got the idea was from, he had established in interviews with her 4 months after the slayings. He interviewed her and found out that she liked to watch Law and Order. So he said, hey, that, you know, she liked Law and Order. And in fact, they just aired a show the night before about a mom who drowns her kids because she thinks that she's Satan and she wants to save their soul. So that's where she learned everything. Well, the jury came back very quickly with a guilty verdict. And there was a reporter in the courtroom who said, you know, that doesn't sound right. I watched the show the other night. I didn't see that. So they tried to contact Dick Wolf, who was the executive producer of the show, and they couldn't reach him. The jury came back. They found her guilty. They sentenced her. And in the time before she was sentenced, the Dick Wolf says, hey, that never happened. We never produced a show like that, nothing at all close to it.
Right.
And so they asked for a new trial. The judge denied them a new trial and merely told the jury, okay, you have to disregard what Park Dietz said. This is, you know, he was wrong about that. So a new, the Supreme Court of the state said, oh, no. Oh, no.
Thank
you
goodness,
You have to really turn this way back and dial it way back and do it appropriately. So you know, Dr. Glenn Lipson knows about this aspect of the case. Maybe I should let him talk and fill in some of the blanks.
Let me kind of back up here a little bit. We're talking about Mothers Who Kill in honor of Mother's Day. We have Donna Kaufman, true crime author. Donna has been to these trials, has worked with the people involved in many of the big high-profile trials and many that are not high-profile at all. And Donna knows the ins and outs of all these cases. We have Dr. Glenn Lipson. Dr. Lipson is a professional. What is your exact title, Dr. Lipson?
I'm a diplomate in forensic psychology, and that makes me a forensic psychologist.
A forensic psychologist. So you can find out why, or you can at least try and explain why we do the things that we do. We're talking about the Andrea Yates murder trial when Park Dietz, the FBI profiler, got up there and basically made up a story.
He taught at the FBI at some point, but he was an independent.
Independent, okay. But he made up this story, and it was just made up that Andrea Yates had watched this Law and Order episode about a woman drowning her five children, and that had never, that episode did not exist. And Donna said that you might know a little bit more about this situation, so we're gonna bring you into this conversation, Dr. Lipson. Tell us what you know.
Well, what I understood from the time at the time was that Park Dietz had been a consultant with Law and Order and had discussed various episodes in terms of the realism with psychiatric issues. And this had actually been a plot that had been discussed. So Park Dietz later indicates that because it had been discussed, he became confused that it had actually been presented. He argues later that he went to the prosecutor who retained him and then tried to have a retraction of that testimony. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, once that's in a juror's mind and that bell has been rung,
it is not
an etch-a-sketch or an eraser that you could then take off the blackboard.
Can't unring that bell.
Yeah, Park Dietz is one of the better-known experts in the United States in terms of high-profile
mm-hmm.
cases. He's testified
Jeffrey Dahmer,
in, let's say, like the
Dahmer
case. And in the Dahmer case, he felt that he was not insane. And for Park Dietz, any time there is any direct action that shows any deliberation, then there is no question of significant mental illness having any bearing.
Can I jump in here just a moment? Okay. You say Park Dietz says that if there is a direct action on the part of the person committing the crime, the murder, we're talking about Mothers Who Kill, therefore he deems them not mentally ill. But can't a mental person have a vision in their mind and act on it? It's real to them, and so therefore they can go and they can kill someone and they can hide things and do all kinds of things because God or the devil or whomever is telling them to do it. How can that be logical? Yes, go ahead. Donna Kaufman.
In the trial, when he was showing footage of his interviews with Andrea, he felt that the fulcrum was when he asked her, was Satan in you or was he standing by you? And she mm-hmm. said, he was standing by me. And he said to the jury, see, that's proof that he wasn't really in her. He was just in the room.
What?
So, you know. It's his way of hair splitting.
Yeah, I guess. That's just not right. Do you agree with that, Dr. Lipson?
I agree. That's exactly the logic that he used. In other words, visual hallucinations are rare. They typically only occur with withdrawal from alcohol, let's say when you see the pink elephants,
mm-hmm.
colloquially. And something like not, you know, having the person stand next to you, having Satan stand next to you is like Ordinary Minds or some of these other movies. It's cinematic,
mm-hmm.
but that's not the real experience of someone who's psychotic.
Okay.
So on the basis of that, he feels this is someone who was, you know, had a history of the illness and problems, but that had nothing to do with her decision to act and the logic and the motivation and the direction that she was able to initiate, which
mm-hmm.
he felt was inconsistent with someone who would, should not be responsible for actions. But it's that sort of the splitting of the hairs. And
what do
one
you
of
think?
The cases, what do I think? I think that, you know, that this is someone who was mentally ill, and these factors have to be taken into account. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, after you talk to people and you try to describe what it's like to be psychotic in a way that people understand,
mm-hmm.
you may slip up in terms of your precision. Did it feel like it was in your head or not in your head? I mean, these are distinctions that are sometimes hard for people to make later when they're interviewed and they're trying to make sense of actions at the time.
Mm-hmm.
What's inside you, where the voice came from, all these things sometimes get confused. We have the need to determine whether or not someone is malingering or falsifying to hold
mm-hmm.
them responsible. So we try to see whether or not symptoms match a pattern that would be consistent with someone who's being genuine.
And that's
something that goes on. And for him, this was not a presentation that matched the presentation of someone who truly was psychotic at the time.
You were about to talk about in these cases, and I interrupted you, and I apologize. You remember where that thought was going?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
He is very much... Park is very well. He was very well respected. This is something that tarnished his reputation. He wrote a letter explaining all the efforts he did to undo the impact of the jury of his testimony, and he still gets a lot of work. So it's not something that destroyed his career.
It destroyed him. If anybody in our chat room has any questions, go ahead and post them, or you are more than welcome to call in. We would love to hear your phone calls if you'd like. Our number is area code 760-825-0933. We are talking with Donna Kaufman, true crime author, and forensic psychologist Dr. Glenn Lipson, and we're talking about mothers who kill, dun-dun-dun. We were just talking about Andrea Yates. What is Andrea Yates' situation now? Do you know, Donna?
I believe that she's in jail and for, you know, a long, excuse me, I believe she's in a mental institution now. There was an argument not so long ago about her mental state and whether she could be put back in jail. And somebody I know was the person who did more interview time with her than anyone else, and I talked to him during this, and I said, you know, how do you not have Rusty in the equation? But his
mm-hmm.
client was Susan, and that was really all, you know, he cared about, that, which is fine for him, that's his job. And,
right.
And he told me this, you know, he didn't share any secrets with me, by the way. Everything he told was actually presented on ABC.
Mm-hmm.
So there was nothing there. He was giving me secrets that I shouldn't ought to know. But
mm-hmm.
my view of it is, the sooner you can get a head shrinker in there to talk to a person after the crime, as soon as possible, when
mm-hmm.
they're still under the mania of whatever happened, that's
right.
going to be important.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I spoke to her, years had passed.
Right.
And, she, you know, very often, I don't know in her case what medication she's still on, but, you know, that could really make a difference. Also, not having to care for five kids under the age of...
She's probably a lot healthier mentally because of that, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, so I do think there is a possibility of parole. It was interesting in the Andrea Yates case is the prosecutor in the beginning wanted the death penalty. And a lot of people, I remember back then very clearly, a lot of people wanted her to get the death penalty. And when I heard about what Rusty Yates did to that woman, you know, she was weak to begin with emotionally. And
right.
they had this weird religious, you know, thing going on where he was in control and he got to do whatever he wanted. And again, being home all day with children and doing nothing else, and you're weak already emotionally, that's going to send you over the edge. And Rusty Yates
Well, and also, what kind of a mother or what kind of a parent can anyone be when they are on antipsychotic drugs
yes.
that are so intense that they're the kinds of things that they give to people who are in straitjackets in mental institutions.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Really, really hard drugs. And then you give them those drugs, and then you give them antidepressants on top of that. So you've got all sorts of things happening, all sorts of chemical problems in her
mm-hmm.
system, and then she stopped taking the pills, and she would throw them down the toilet, and, you know, all sorts of, you know, changing of doctors, different opinions, and I'm not sure that's ever been satisfactorily. I don't know if there was a lawsuit on Rusty's behalf or on her, the part of her family.
I think there was. I don't know what happened
mm-hmm.
with it, though, but I do believe there was with the doctors.
Her family had some claim to make there for bad medical treatment, bad pharmacological treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Rusty has since gone on to remarry, and I believe he has children now.
Yes, that was his main goal, he said, was to remarry and to start having kids. And I just hope his wife is okay, because he is not, you know, he's, it just makes me crazy to talk about him. When I saw that, I almost went through the TV. I was so angry. Okay, let's move on to
Can I mention another thing? If people are looking for a movie to watch tonight
mm-hmm.
that celebrates bad mothers,
yes.
You would be wise to rent the story of Diane Downs.
Oh, yes.
Small Sacrifices, with Farrah Fawcett playing Diane. She was nominated for an Emmy for this,
mm-hmm.
and it was Anne Rule's book. And Diane Downs was somebody who, I'm thinking it was like 1983, was driving her three children on an Oregon rural road when she claims a bushy-haired stranger jumped out and shot the three kids and shot her in the arm. And then she very slowly, and this happened while the song Hungry Like a Wolf was playing from Duran
Duran. Yep,
and
that's right.
And I cannot hear that without thinking about this.
Me either.
And she very slowly drove to the hospital. One of the kids was dead. There are three kids, 3, 7, and 8. The
mm-hmm.
7-year-old girl was dead. The 3-year-old was paralyzed. He's a boy. They're all adults now, the two surviving ones, who were adopted by the prosecutor and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And the eldest daughter, when she could finally talk again, when she could open her eyes and she saw her mother, oh, this is such a horrible scene. The nurses testified about this, that the kid was opening her eyes and stabilizing, and then mom walks in the room and the kid's heart rate off the map, and she's terrified that mom's going to kill her again. So it took 9 months
mm-hmm.
before Diane Downs was arrested and put on trial, during which time she got pregnant by somebody else.
Right.
And she is very much a Casey Anthony kind of person, who
yes.
is self-centered, narcissistic, refuses to take any remorse. In fact,
mm-hmm.
her performing in I think 2 years ago was her still maintaining that she was not the one who shot the kids.
Right.
Of course, all the forensics led to that. But it's a great movie and it's a great story. And I'd like to also suggest that people check out. And here's the website: Author Anne Rules, all
mm-hmm.
one word: AnneRule. Excuse me, Anne Rule. AuthorAnneRule.com, and that's Anne's whole, you know, everything about Anne Rule, who's the queen of true crime writing
mm-hmm.
and movies. And it's run by her daughter, Leslie, who's also a great author as well.
Well, and the Diane Down case, that's an interesting one. And Dr. Lipsum, if I could bring you in on this as well, we're talking about Mothers Who Kill with Dr. Glenn Lipsum and Donna Kaufman. And Diane Downs, one of the first true crime movies that I remember with Farrah Fawcett. It was fascinating. Thank you for that recap, Donna. That was perfect. There was an kind of they intimated ever so slightly in there that Diane Downs was sexually abused by her father. It wasn't said, it wasn't spoken, but there's just one scene where Farrah Fawcett shoots a look at her dad and says, "Well, Daddy, we all have our secrets, don't we?" And he got up and storms out. And I've always felt that was kind of like she had been abused. On something like the Diane Downs case, would that be surprising that she had been sexually abused, or would you kind of expect that? Dr. Glenn Lipson.
It would not be surprising. In the infanticide cases I've worked on and children who've been murdered, it is not uncommon for the mother to have been sexually abused.
What's the connection? I mean, because they're obviously totally different acts. What's the connection? Why do they end up killing their children if they've been sexually abused?
Well, there are different pathways. One pathway is depression. And let me tell you a case I testified in where her first child was the product of being raped by the uncle. Mm. Her name is Angela Glasgow versus People.
Mm-hmm.
And we use the diminished actuality case, which in California replaced diminished capacity after the killing of people had seen the Harvey Milk movie.
Mm-hmm.
So about the shooting in New York, Mayor Moscone. So what happened, Dan White did that crime. So what happened was she was raped by the uncle. She allegedly was being abused by the husband who was in the military.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't able to take care of herself very well, became very depressed, and did not really feed the infant adequately.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was the infant ended up starving to death. In addition, she was afraid to leave the house, which happens sometimes in women who've been sexually abused and
mm-hmm.
are currently being physically abused, because if they go out in public, you end up seeing the bruises. So the husbands try to control them and keep in the house. So as the baby's health was failing, she never was able to get the child to an infant.
Mm-hmm.
Being a Navy spouse, when she went in for physical checks, they noticed that this was a high-risk pregnancy because her teeth were falling out and she couldn't nutritionally take care of herself.
Mm-hmm.
She barely ever took the baby out of the car seat. Finally, the back of the baby's skull collapsed against the weight of being left in the car seat. And the baby ended up starving to death. He also was mentally retarded. But
there was
a history of child and physical abuse, and that was present. It was also present in the Susan Eubanks case. In the Susan Eubanks case, her mother, when she was young, used to take her out on some of the jobs that she did in terms of prostitution. And she'd be in the room when sex was taking place and sometimes included by Johns who wanted to use children. Her father, who was an alcoholic, turned her over to friends to have sex. She was raped repeatedly by a group of men under a bridge. So there was this extensive history. And for her, this triggered what we call the golden fantasy or altruistic suicide. Her current husband at the time was Eric Eubanks. When I was involved in that case, I had a chance to not only evaluate her, but interview the husband, who was estranged, who felt very responsible for what happened.
Mm-hmm.
He was not allowed to be around her because there was a restraining order for domestic violence.
Let me just say that she shot, what, how many of her sons to death?
I think five.
Four or five.
She shot and killed. Oh, that's terrible. I'm sorry.
And then she shot herself and actually coded dead, and they revived her and then tried her, and she's now awaiting the death penalty in California. I signed a declaration in that case for an appeals process that's ongoing. I never ended up testifying in part because Park Dietz was the rebuttal witness, and they thought they could bring in everything through the testimony of others.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't testify in that, but I've just recently written a declaration that had my opinions in that matter, which is going to the appellate court. So in that instance, she had and wrote instructions which really reflected the concept that we'll all be together in heaven. And there was a sense of, how could I leave these children in this world where you get physically abused,
mm-hmm.
where you get beaten, where you get raped? It is better if we're all together in God, with God. And she asked that the children be buried with her in her instructions in the same coffin so she could be with them forever.
Oh, wow.
So what happens with some of these women is the belief that they can't separate themselves from the child.
Mm-hmm.
The child at times was part of them during the maternal period of time, during the pregnancy, and they don't see the child as being separate for them or able to survive without them.
Right.
So what happens is...
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so basically it's, well, I have to leave the world, so I better take you with me because you'll just suffer if I don't.
Well,
that's
correct. This is very similar to the case that we started talking about at the top, Lashandra Armstrong, who, African-American woman, which we don't usually see these kinds of cases in African-American women, but this was another woman who loaded up her minivan with her four kids and drove it into the Hudson River, and she died. Three of the kids died. One of the kids got free and ran for help, and the husband, or the, yeah, I guess they were married. It never did anything, apparently, to make her life better, except adding more sperm to the pile.
Mm-hmm.
And was the one who stepped in and said, oh, you're not burying them together, no way. And, you know,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, he's suing the city as well because they didn't have proper barriers up against the Hudson River. And so he's suing the, you know, whatever county it is the Hudson River's in, because it's
right.
their fault he was able to drive in the river. Yeah, this guy sounds like a real charmer.
You know, he's got a good argument. That's certainly something that should be presented in court. But along with that will be his lack of support in any kind of way, and his evaluation as a father, as a parent.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. Hopefully.
It doesn't take her off the hook, but you know, it certainly gives you another area to look at as a juror.
Dr. Lipson, I need to ask you something, and I want to go back to Andrea Yates, and then I want to discuss something about an interesting case of a mother-son killing team briefly. But Dr. Lipson, in the Andrea Yates case, she had, what was it, four boys, and then she finally had the little girl. And
yes.
my son said something interesting to me. We were discussing this case earlier, and he said, and this goes along with what you said, Dr. Lipson, he said, what if Andrea Yates had the little girl and she realized that her little girl was going to have the life that she had, and so therefore she just didn't want her to grow up like she did, and she didn't want to leave her other kids. And I thought that was a very interesting way to look at it. Do you think in Andrea Yates's case that perhaps having a girl kind of kicked that trigger off and got things in motion?
I think just having the baby, and that's what happens with postpartum psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is after the pregnancy, you don't have estrogen left in your body. And one of the things that's important for your listeners to know is that sometimes depression can be treated better by seeing an endocrinologist or a psychiatrist or your family physician in addition,
mm-hmm.
because the
mm-hmm.
adding of natural estrogen very often has a lot to do with depression. So that's why for most women, they experience something called the baby blues, or a little bit of postpartum feeling down afterwards,
mm-hmm.
because your hormones are changed during the pregnancy because you don't go through the cycle of the production of progesterone to result in the release of the blastocyst or egg, and then further the estrogen, you know, to prepare for the implantation of that egg if it gets fertilized. So you
mm-hmm.
go through a period of time when that hormonal cycle isn't happening, and then suddenly when the birth happens, you've had the Pitocin and all these things which are natural in the birth, and the lack of these endogenous elements in the body, the hormones, and that then leads to depression. So for some people, to regulate what's going on in the endocrine system has a lot to do with dealing with depression. So what happens is these things aren't logical, and they just fuel underlying beliefs and fears and desires with a sense of this is a rational solution at the time, that this solves the problem. And it's not really thought out very clearly in that state of a mind that is pushed over the edge by the presence of psychosis. Now, what we're saying is not that explanation is exculpation, which is a fancy way of stating that if we know why someone does something, it doesn't necessarily mean they're not responsible and be held accountable.
Right.
But we try to understand these things, so if someone's in a similar situation in the future, that this could be prevented.
Absolutely.
That's why during the Susan Eubanks trial, she allowed me to go on television and talk about my evaluation, which you seldom allow someone to do, because, and you also heard it in her closing statement, because she wanted people to know that when you're abused like this, and the doctor she went to work for heard about her childhood trauma and said he could help her, and he did it by stripping her and then sexually molesting her and then giving her more and more drugs as she decompensated.
My God.
The amazing thing about the Eubanks case, and she's, you know, waiting to be executed. The amazing thing about it is she, right before the homicide was committed, she went grocery shopping and bought groceries for the rest of the week, which was apparent in the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
And when she went to that dark place, she called her best friend to come over and get the children. And the friend who was with her husband at the time, who had the restraining order, never came over to get the kids.
Oh,
and that only
no.
fueled her sense that, you know, this isn't a world to leave kids in. One ex-husband, John Armstrong, was a white supremacist who had abused her, and then Eric had engaged in domestic violence, and there was a history of repeated childhood abuse.
How did she get the death penalty with all this abuse and these horrors happening to her?
Well, because, I mean, none of this was presented the way that you're hearing it right now. They try to bring it in through people. This is a conservative area here in San Diego. And the issue with children is the slaughter of innocence, which is what this was.
That's true, yes.
What she did with the youngest was she medicated them so they were asleep. But her oldest son was doing homework, and she shot him in the living room.
That's
and if
right,
you look at this, if you look at this house, there was the rocking horse, which had two sides that Eric, her husband, had made. There were all the kids' videos. These were not children that were neglected. But the issues of self-esteem, the regulation of your emotions when you've been through something like this, the problems that you have with anger, all of these things come together in this perfect storm that, including the abuse of the physician, who she was working for after getting a degree. And one other element I think was important in this, and I've seen this in other cases where there's murder, and that is while working, doing hip replacements, these are pretty heavy devices, she had also hurt her back, so she was in chronic pain.
Oh,
chronic
my gosh.
Pain is also something that contributes to the presence of depression.
Absolutely.
So it takes all these elements coming together.
I see we're almost out of time, and can I just interrupt? And
oh, that's fine. We can go past an hour. That's fine. We're fine. We can if you guys don't mind. We still have lots to talk about. Can we hang on longer than an hour? Is that cool with you guys?
Cool with me.
Yeah.
What about you, Donna?
Yeah.
Okay, Donna, go ahead.
Sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt Glenn. He was on a good roll there. But you know, basically, what I want to say is if child rape were such a factor, we would, in homicidal mothers, we would be seeing Elizabeth Fritzl on a crime spree across Austria right now. She is the woman who was kept in a dungeon by her father, who is impregnated her 7 times and killed one of her, you know, one of the kids he killed. She's just kind of reestablishing herself outside in the world again. So, you know, it's all something for a jury to consider. But really, I can see why people just go, well, you went too far. You just
right.
went too far. You should ask for help. But the thing I want to do, I mean, here we're beating up women. You know, they deserve it, yeah. But I also want to say these things just don't happen overnight. They're usually not.
Right. There are so many signs, yes.
Look around you. Look at your sisters, yourselves, your mm-hmm. daughters. Is there somebody drowning with mental illness, depression, pharmacological problems, overwhelmed with a bad marriage? Help them out. Extend
Absolutely.
A little hand. Absolutely. Saw Nancy Grace talking about, oh, I never saw it coming, you know. We have to be responsible for each other a little. And if that means putting your nose where it doesn't belong to save some kids, do it.
And do it. And the thing people have to remember, too, and Dr. Lipson, I think you'll agree with me, is that a mentally ill person, the reason they're mentally ill, they can't think normally to help themselves. And so you need to step in and give them a hand up. Okay, and that's real hard in this country because we think, well, we just got to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps, you know, just get out of bed and exercise and you'll be fine. No, it doesn't work like that, okay? You need help and people need to step in and help you get back up on your feet. You don't expect people to run a marathon after a kidney transplant. You can't expect somebody to be mentally healthy after they've had, you know, a huge bout of depression. They need help. Okay, I need to change topics just a little bit here, and I don't mean to surprise you, Donna, but one of our listeners brought up a very interesting case that I had forgotten about. You will remember the mother-son team of the killers. They're Sante and Kenneth Kimes. Remember them?
Yeah, sure.
Sante Kimes, I think that's how you pronounce it, convinced her son to help her kill these people so they could get their money. And the last person they did this to was a little old lady in New York who had this beautiful townhouse. And
yeah.
they came in, and she was beautiful. Sante Kimes, okay. She looked like Elizabeth Taylor. And she came in and kind of befriended this little old lady and rented part of the townhouse from her. They killed her and then faked the document saying that she had given them the townhouse. Eventually, they were caught and tried. Dr. Lipscomb, what...
And there was a TV movie.
Oh, a big TV movie on it. Big, big TV movie. Dr. Lipson, what would cause a son and a mother to have that? That's a very sick relationship. Give us a little bit of the background of the dynamic of that relationship.
Well, basically what happens is you have someone who only cares about themselves, which is what you find in someone who's a psychopath, mm-hmm. someone who has that mask of sanity. And what you do is you create a child that exists only for your needs and in terms of you. And that then child, in order to have a sense of love and acceptance, you basically shape into doing your bidding. And what happens is, and we all have to recognize, that our view of reality is somewhat created in terms of interactions with others. There's
mm-hmm.
a consensual nature to that. So if you look at the movie Natural Born Killers, and I've seen this before, where you end up with a dominant party with someone who is weak and has their own problems, they convince someone that this is all right.
Right.
And for someone who's a sociopath to say, if someone is so stupid to do this, they've lived their life, they deserve to be dead,
mm-hmm.
and you're able to convince someone that this is all right. And people do this in terms of jihadists and other people who get together and they create a reality where violence is seen as a tool to support what you're trying to accomplish.
And somehow,
sometimes it's easier to grift an old lady than it is to actually get a job.
There you go.
That was Kenny's problem, as he was just a mama's boy who didn't ever have a day of hard work in his life except for, you know, burying bodies.
He really was a mama's boy. Boy, that's scary.
Correct, and that's why we have elder abuse laws and child abuse laws, because there's two ends of the spectrum where people can be taken advantage of and no one knows it, because children can be stuck in homes at a young age and so could the elderly. And
very
there's a tremendous amount of elder abuse going on in this country.
Really? That's interesting. Yes. I know of elder abuse, but I did not realize that it was that prevalent. If we could just touch on that for just
a
moment.
They had other kills too, by the way. You know,
they
and if
did?
You want to see a fictionalized view of their relationship, go see The Grifters, which was Annette Bening, Angelica Houston, John
Cusack. Oh,
that's Cusack,
a great movie, yeah.
Mom and son. And,
do you think they really killed other people that we don't know about, or that we know
no,
about, we just can't pin it on them?
That's why they're both in jail. I can't remember if they were tried for both of them. I think so. She never tried to kill her sons. She had two. One was good
right.
that I know about. So it's kind of off topic.
That was a bizarre case.
About the
elder abuse. Let me just kind of bring this back around. Okay, let's say you grow up and you have to take care of your mother or your father, and they're living with you, and you start abusing them. Is that the circle happening? Is it more likely that that child was abused by this parent, therefore they turn around and abuse the elder, kind of like it just, you know, what comes around goes around type thing?
Sometimes that's the case, but on other occasions, because the primary attachment is with the mother, very often in our landmark forensic cases, it's the mother, and on Mother's Day it's important to point out, who ends up suffering the grief and getting murdered. Those are cases like Durkheimer versus Kansas. It's not uncommon if someone is psychotic and delusional and paranoid that the person who ends up being murdered is the mother.
The mother, because the mother is the...
That's defense thinking, and it has a place in the courtroom, but I'm going to say, again, it comes back to somebody wanting grandma's or mommy's social security, and I see a case like this at least once a month, and the most recent one was the guy who dressed up as his mother, I mean straight out of Psycho, and would go cash her social security checks for a couple years after she was dead.
Oh, geez.
I know another one about, you know, he kept the body in the house and just wouldn't let anyone in, and she was rotting in the stinky bedroom until it stopped stinking, and, you know, he was living off
of... awful.
Yeah, he's going to get a mental defense for that, too, but...
Donna, you said two things that I want to underscore because I think they're so important, and I'm grateful you brought it up. One in four women in this country experience some form of sexual abuse. Not every one of them goes out and is
right.
at risk for murder. So the fact that the event happens doesn't necessarily mean it's going to have that outcome. And I think that's a very good point that Donna makes.
Yeah.
And second, the relationship between violence and mental illness is relatively low, and people in the media believe it is very high. And I don't want people to be afraid of friends and family members who at one point may be suffering from depression.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is if someone is suffering, to help them, don't get frightened that now they're going to end up waking up one morning and they'll find a hatchet or a knife and commit heinous
right.
crimes. So it is low. Usually you will find other factors and a confluence of things coming together.
Mm-hmm.
And in these cases, there are choices that people make.
Mm-hmm.
To exploit people, to get money. They do things out of selfishness, out of greed, out of malice, out of many different things that they could be held responsible for. So the presence of mental illness doesn't make someone violent, and it doesn't mean that they're not responsible for their actions. And those
right.
are two things we have to underscore.
Absolutely right. And I think mental illness is probably the biggest underreported illness and one of the ones that causes us the most trouble in our lives. And hopefully someday we can come around and see that, again, mental illness is not a weakness. It's still viewed as a weakness. It's still viewed as a character flaw, and it is not. But again, like you said, Dr. Lipsum, they have to be responsible because they're the ones that did it. You know, I mean, that's all there is to it. So it's kind of a double-edged sword
here
a bit.
When I evaluate mental cases or when I evaluate criminal cases, it's always with a mind for will it be prosecuted and will they get a conviction? What are the
mm-hmm.
chances? The odds have to be good, unlike, say, the Ramsey case where an disease conviction is impossible. So, you know, you have to look at the whole with that in mind, too. And just
mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. Let's just touch on a few other cases here, and then we're going to talk about some real crazy moms. What's Casey Anthony up to these days? Now, granted, she was found not guilty. Doesn't mean she's innocent. Was found not guilty in the death of Kaylee. But let's face it. Come on. I think it's safe to say that she knows exactly what happened to Kaylee, whatever that was. Do you have any updates on her, Donna? I was looking around, and I just, it's just some crazy stuff. She's living with a preacher or something bizarre like that. Have you heard anything?
She's been in that place for a long time, and she's, you know, got this newfound Christian faith, which actually kind of comes through in the letters that she wrote from jail. I think that the big news is that Jeff, what's his name, the prosecutor, is going to be portrayed by, again, Rob Lowe, who just came off of Drew Peterson in an upcoming Lifetime movie about his book. Jose Baez just wrote a book, so I don't know that anyone's going to do his take on it, but I actually think that would be the more interesting of the two books. But you should bring Jose on and I'll be happy to speak with him as well.
I have tried, I have tried over and over. But the problem is, Jose...
book mode.
Well, that's true. Now he's got a book out. Maybe he'll do it. The problem is, Jose knows that, Jose Baez knows that the people on Web Sleuth know, you know, all the real deal here. He can't snow anybody. But and maybe if I could get him on the book.
My book, it makes no bones about the fact that I think, and Dr. Sarah West thinks, that she got away with murder. But we also talk about the reasons why and the wonderful lawyering that happened on the part of Jose Baez. So I'd be happy to appear with him and buoy up his side of it against our genius friends at Web Sleuth and Forms for Justice.
That sounds great. We'll see. I'll give it a shot again, but he just will not. We'll give it a shot. That's a good idea.
By the way, I'm calling it like I see it as somebody who copiously studied the case and wrote about it. So
right, exactly.
About Casey, allegedly, there's a report now that she is on Pinterest and using the screen name of a woman who died some time ago. So
really?
I have long stopped being interested in anything that she does,
mm-hmm.
so I didn't check it out myself. But it sounds consistent. She's an egomaniac. We've not stopped hearing the last of her.
Yeah, you're right. And, Doctor, we're talking with Donna Kaufman, true crime author, and Dr. Glenn Lipsum, a forensic psychologist. And, Doctor, do you think that Casey finding God and becoming religious, does that surprise you at all, Casey Anthony behaving like this now?
No. I mean, I believe that she would find some reason to get someone involved with her to feel that she's of value, to feel that they've, you know, engaged in the miracle of helping you find some redemption,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to create a relationship that initially will be very rewarding for her.
For her, exactly.
That's, you know, that they will pray together, that they will they will attempt to soothe her, and they will attempt to lead her in the path of righteousness. So that's the sort of drama that she could really get involved with.
She can get all kinds of attention that way.
Correctly. Correct. So. And that could last, you know, for a period of time.
Right. Okay, let's move on a little bit. How about if we talk about, are there any other mothers that you want to discuss, Donna Kaufman, before we go on to the kind of crazy, kooky ones?
Trisha, I think we lost Donna.
Oh, no. Oh, no. What happened? She'll call back.
I don't know. She went away, so I'm looking for her to call back.
She'll call back. Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's talk. I'm sorry, what, doctor?
I believe she'll call back, but there's one other type. When we go over the list of how mothers sometimes result in the demise of their children, there's one other group we haven't discussed.
And what's that?
And those are the group that, through the art of wrong discipline, end up causing the death of their children.
Give us examples of what you mean.
Oh, all right, I had a case where a mother had a child that kept waking up and constantly asking for something to drink all night.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a toddler. So the mother basically responded by saying, the next time you ask for something to drink, I will give you salt instead.
Mm-hmm.
So when the baby woke up and asked for something to drink, she gave the baby a teaspoon of salt. A teaspoon of salt will kill a child. Salt is a poison. It throws off the electrolytes and the balance in the system. And she hadn't intended to kill the child. She thought that the punishment would then result in the child no longer asking for
right.
treatment.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
In addition, you have children who are sometimes sat on by a woman who tries to contain it, not recognizing or suffocating their child,
mm-hmm.
not aware of it. And these are cases of discipline going awry. And there's an attempt to make the child basically subject to punishment for what they did, but yet the punishment then ends up resulting in the infant's demise. Then, of course, there are cases, and I had one of these, where a mother thought that her husband was possessed by Satan,
mm-hmm.
and what she did was, the baby had a cold, the baby started to cry, and the husband, she was afraid, was going to beat her or do something to her, and she covered the baby's mouth to prevent it from crying out.
Oh,
no. By the time the husband left the general area, she had suffocated the baby.
Oh, God. Now, these types of cases that you just mentioned, and I do have something to say about Casey Anthony. We have Donna Kaufman back, and we'll get to that in just a second. But Dr. Glenn Lipscomb, tell us about the psychology behind this. Are just some of these mothers mean? I mean, I know the one that thought her husband was Satan. Yeah, that's mental illness. But say someone who sits on their kid and kills them by crushing them. Are they just, low IQ, mean? Were they abused? What's the deal?
Well, sometimes it's low IQ. Sometimes it's frustration. Sometimes it's overreaction. You have people who shake their babies because they're crying and want them to calm down, not recognizing they're causing brain damage. Although now, Barry Shank from the Innocence Project no longer believes that shaken baby syndrome is something that really exists.
I don't. Well, really? What do you believe that, or what do you think?
I'm going to leave that up to the pathologists like Cheryl and others to speak about. So
I've got to look into that. That's interesting. That's interesting that he would say that. So that's a good show topic, definitely. I want to just back up on Casey Anthony. I have a text here from a friend who tells me, let me get to it, hold on. She tells me that Casey left the church in January, and Mrs. Camp left her a scathing voicemail. Now, I don't have time to keep up on Casey Anthony, so it doesn't surprise me. Have you heard that, Donna, that she left, that Casey Anthony left?
No, I haven't. I as far as I heard, she was still living there, but I don't know. you know, I just want to say something about the smothering moms. There's a case now where a mother was almost charged a few years ago with sleeping with her child and rolling over on it, and it died of suffocation. Mm-hmm. And all the authorities let her go and said, just don't do that again. And she said, oh, I won't. Well, she did it again, and it happened again. So that was just in the last couple of weeks that the second child died. And, you know,
I'm
sure everyone is looking at her, you know, wondering what level of reality she's operating on.
She can't, you know, if that happened to me, first of all, I'd never be able to function again. But the last thing I would ever do is take my other child and sleep with them in bed. You know, I would just, oh my God. Just, I don't, that's just a whole level of stupid or crazy that I'm not aware of. Let's go to the expert, Dr. Lipsum. What would cause a woman who accidentally rolled over and killed on her baby to do the exact same thing again? I mean, what is she thinking?
Well, you know, that's why we have to do evaluations to determine things. So, I mean, you don't want to talk to her, but for some people, it is more convenient. You don't think it'll happen again. You're tired. You're exhausted. You've had a child that kept you all night and up all night, waking up with feeding, teething, with colic, and it's just going to be easier to get some sleep finally and have the baby next to you. So some people have the baby next to them because of their own needs for touch and for cuddling, and they forget that the vulnerability a child might have about rolling over. They don't believe that something like that could ever happen again. So there's all sorts of justification that people have. It's, Elliot Aronson likes to say, and he's a social psychologist, he says that, we're not rational animals. We tend to be rationalizing animals.
So people
will go back
and
then come up with any justification they want later to say, no, it's going to be different. And that's what brings people into therapy. They keep trying the same thing again and again when it hasn't worked the last five previous times.
Right, exactly.
The idea of attachment parenting is very much in the news, which if you saw Time Magazine this week, it has a mom very much attached to her 3-year-old son at the breast. And, of course, this is highly debated, whether she is a reasonable mom or an exploitive person whose kid is going to be beat up for the rest of his life every day.
Let's talk about that for a moment, shall we? Time Magazine had a cover of a mom breastfeeding a child. The child could basically chew a steak. That's how old he was. He's standing on a chair. Her breast is out. He's sucking on her teat and looking at the camera like, huh? And she's standing there totally defiant, like, I dare you to say anything to me. I'm breastfeeding my child.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
you know, there are some people out there, and I don't know what else to call them other than breastfeeding Nazis. I breastfed, but, you know, I was afraid to mention anything to some women because if I said I'm going to stop breastfeeding, I stopped at 9 months, they would have a fit. You know, and it's just
right,
that there is this group that are so, it's their fever in their pushing of breastfeeding is scary to me. And I just find this over the top. I think this is going to make this kid all messed up. Dr. Glenn Lipscomb, am I right? Are we going to see this kid, you know, killing women that looks like his mother when he's 15?
Not necessarily. He might look to marry a busty woman or something. Well, you know, I'm not sure how that's going to change his perception, but let me speak to that for a moment. There's an analyst that we used to tease at Manninger's, and we said his mother finally stopped breastfeeding him when his beard was beginning to hurt her. So what happens is you'll find in other cultures, family beds, you'll find in Latin cultures, etc., that they breastfeed children much longer. And it isn't breastfeeding alone that's going to determine the health of a child. Now, albeit obstetrics has reached, and pediatrics has reached the awareness that the colostrum, or the initial aspect of breastfeeding, carries immunities and is very helpful to the child. It's also helpful to the healing of the mother in terms of the contraction of the uterus and the shrinking back and the healing.
Very good.
It's very good, but the issue is one of what's the community you're in. If you're with another group of women who belong to La Leche League or lactation consultants, mm-hmm. they may not have a problem with someone being breastfed. So there are other issues of how you encourage autonomy and any number of things that we have to look at, because there are multiple factors, including temperament, parenting, the role of the father, the presence of siblings. Is it every meal that's that way? I doubt it. This child is probably eating other food in addition. So, and this may be something that happens occasionally for comfort. How do you wean a child off? When do you wean a child off a pacifier? These are all questions that we address, but you have to look at the whole gestalt or the whole picture to know mm-hmm. the impact of a certain behavior on a child's development.
Giselle
Bundchen, the supermodel who's married to Tom, what's his name, the football
quarterback
player.
Quarterback Tom, yeah, quarterback guy.
He is Brady. And right. she has a son. She said her son was 6 months old and potty trained, completely
mm-hmm.
potty trained.
How
I've
can
never
that
heard
be?
Of that before.
How can,
well,
if he can't
because
walk.
She just stopped. She stopped putting him in diapers because she said she was very attuned to the signs he was giving her when he was ready to, you know, make a movement or make a, you know, whatever. And,
oh wait, no. Let me just say, it was the nanny that was very attuned. I'm sorry. forget it. It's so easy for supermodels with super money and super nannies to tell us how great they are as a mother. I'm sorry. I'm about
well,
ready to gag.
Well, she got into it too over breastfeeding, and but you know, there's a big difference I think between who's arguing against breast milk. If you can do it, great. But that's why God gave us pumps. You know, you don't
exactly.
have to. You know, you don't have to keep the kid to your chest. It's about you at that point.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and that's what I did. I pumped.
Pumps and all Medela pumps and all those other sorts of things that, mm-hmm. that could aid in that process. So what happens is, however, babies and children have something that we call motoric overflow, and it's mm-hmm. one of the signs that we assess when they get older to look developmentally, and that is it's easy for most people who have a baby to tell when that baby is going to have a bowel movement. You basically see their face, and they're squinting and straining
right,
and all
those
other sorts of signs, mm-hmm. and that's that look most mothers and fathers would recognize if they're tuned to their children, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we try to train them immediately.
Right.
So there could be implications in terms of control, how you feel about messiness and all that stuff that later on can affect a child. So you really have to look at the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you could tell a child is squirming because they have to go to the bathroom or pulling their face in and that look they have doesn't necessarily mean that they should be trained at 6 months.
Yeah, I
everything
just find that odd.
Everything has to happen in a developmentally natural time.
Mm-hmm.
And that
odd.
Varies with children. Yeah, I find it unusual.
Yeah, I just don't buy it. I think she's just being an oddball. But anyway, and here's the thing. I just want to say one more thing about breastfeeding. It's a personal decision, and there's lots of babies that were bottle fed that are okay and fine and have grown up to be incredible people. So if somebody
and healthy.
Does, pardon me,
and healthy
exactly. So if somebody doesn't want to breastfeed, that's their prerogative, okay? Let them do it. Don't attack them and make them feel they're a bad mother because they don't. I was fortunate. It wasn't a problem for me. But boy, I'll tell you, that they just scare me, these women that are just so fanatic about breastfeeding that it's you know, it's all they think about, all they do, and it makes me crazy. But anyway,
well,
speaking...
Well, a couple weeks ago in the news was Alicia Silverstone, the actress, who was
pre-masticating her
miso soup and then spitting it into the mouth of her son, who was, I think, 14 months old or something. And she said that they did that all the time. He'd love it. He'd come to her and make chomping faces, and she'd know, you know, that's how he was. But, you know, she thought it was adorable and cute, and she made a YouTube video of it, and she got some needed press, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that when we see birds do it, it is what they do. But you know what? They don't have forks, knives, spoons, and fingers.
Well, exactly.
So,
I just, I mean, that's her business. It's not going to hurt the child at all, you know, so it's not something that, that we need to be in on. But she did put it on YouTube, so I feel we can comment on it. And I just think it's just flipping weird. I'm sorry. It's just really strange. Again, you know, how much time does she spend with a child? Where's, you know, how many nannies? That's, you know, when I hear people giving advice about children, and I know that they have nannies. I don't know if Alicia Silverstone does, actually, but that's, and I think don't tell
me.
She's
pretty hands on.
Yeah, you know, when I'll talk to a mom who's got all her kids home and is, you know, working at a regular job, I'll take advice from that person, but not somebody that has mm-hmm. a nanny. But I want to stress, Alicia Silverstone, I have no idea if she has a nanny or not. It's fine. It was just, to me, a weird thing to do. Very, an interesting topic, to say the least. Okay, let's move on to mothers. From crazy mothers, we're not saying those, you know, that Alicia Silverstone or others were crazy necessarily, just kind of did some weird things. But let's move on to some really weird, crazy moms. And let's talk about Tanning Mom. This is a mother that looks like a baseball mitt. And she took her 5-year-old daughter to a tanning salon. She claims she did not get her in the bed. Prosecutors say differently. Dr. Glenn Lipscomb, a forensic psychologist, what?
Is there a legal case against this? I don't think there is.
Wasn't she charged?
No. I don't think there's any claim that the child was in the tanning bed or any investigation about that. And by the way, that kid is so red-haired and light-skinned mm-hmm. that, you know, she couldn't even go in under the moon without getting burned. So I don't think that the kid was involved whatsoever. She was just there in the room while Tanning Mom
was tanning.
Went in and did her thing.
Well, it's very bizarre. I do believe there was an investigation because she was burned. And somebody said that Mom took her in the tanning salon. So I do believe there was an investigation, but I thought she was charged. Again, I'm, you know, I don't know whether I'm coming or going, so it's sometimes a little difficult. But let's go to forensic psychologist Dr. Glenn Lipscomb. And Dr. Lipscomb, what the hell? Talk to me. Why does somebody want to turn their skin into leather and think it looks – you look at her, and she looks like a Saturday Night Live skit, which it became with Kristen Wiig, and it was hilarious. But even her makeup didn't look as dark as the Tanning Mom. I don't know her name. Doctor, help me understand this woman, please.
Well, we all have different views of what beautiful is, and you can see it in terms of the tattoos people have. I mean, the fact that we have so much plastic surgery now in high school girls, mm-hmm. which is a phenomenon in this country, but we have views of what beautiful is, and sometimes they're very odd, and these procedures actually have medical and other implications in terms of what a person is exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what happens is we sort of define things consensually in terms of what's normal, and if something is very far out there to have surgery to make yourself look like a mountain lion in terms of tattoos and what you do with your teeth, most people would consider to be odd. But someone might think it's beautiful, and there may be a circle of people who then agree that's something that's normal. So it's, it never surprises me what people will do. I once was treating a woman who looked almost identical to Betty Boop.
Oh,
and,
really?
Through the process of plastic surgery. So, and that was this woman's view of what beautiful was.
No, that is weird. And, that's very strange.
You know, and when you reach a point, and some people have, where they're not capable of smiling anymore,
uh-huh.
or having facial expressions because they've killed so many nerves on their face through Botox,
right.
in order to get rid of wrinkles, you have the pursuit of beauty at what cost?
Mm-hmm.
The pursuit of what you consider to be desirable at what cost?
Right.
And that's something that can happen with anyone who ends up with an obsession
mm-hmm.
with the belief that this creates an aspect of me that everyone's going to admire.
Right, everyone's going to think it's pretty. Well, what about the kid? I mean, the kid has got to be totally messed up here. Because first of all, you're right, like Donna Kaufman, as you pointed out, the child is very fair-skinned, red hair. She's not going to tan. Is mom going to say, you're not pretty like mom? Or I don't know, that family dynamic, I wish she would charge tickets and I could buy a ticket and just watch that family dynamic, because it totally fascinates me on a freakish level that somebody would do that.
Can I make an interjection here?
Yes.
I'm not convinced the whole thing wasn't a spoof. And it looks to me like she's got shoe polish on, and she has been kicked out of the tanning place where she went regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that, you know, this is a woman like Octomom and many other, the teen moms on MTV, who sees reality TV as a place to make money and get fame. And, you know, she wants to do it from, you know, her tanning bed. That's just something someone else
hasn't
thought of yet.
So in other words, maybe she's looking for publicity for a reality show of some sort. Well, that very well could be.
That's what we're looking at in 2012 today. That's where reality is. Everyone wants to get in on the act. That's the entire driving force, if you ask me, about Octomom.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we know, her new porn career.
Oh, that's what I was going to talk about. But let me just say one more thing about Tanning Bed Mom. Apparently now what has happened is Congress is making rumblings about looking into the tanning industry and cranking up the rules a bit. So the tanning industry is very angry at Tanning Mom for that very, very reason. Okay, let's go to Octomom.
Well, and
Octomom,
by the way, she said on one interview that she had had skin cancer. She had been treated for skin cancer. So that's why I suspect this is all a bunch of bunk. And, maybe it isn't that she's truly nuts, but whatever. I hope we've heard enough of her.
I do, too. Let's talk about Octomom, Nadia Suleiman. I can't remember her name. Here's the thing. She has two careers now. One of them, she is on a website where you can pay, I think, it's either $15 or $20 a minute, and you can call and talk to her. She'll actually talk to you, but you have to deposit $30 through an account. And then you call and talk to her. I heard her on a talk show, and she's nuts. She doesn't shut up. She'll talk to anybody about anything. And then her other, and this is the same woman that runs this website, she's a former porn star, is getting Nadia into the porn industry to make some money, because she just recently filed for bankruptcy. Donna, I'll come to you in just a moment, but we're talking with forensic psychologist Dr. Glenn Lipsom. And Dr. Octomom had 6 kids and then 8 kids artificially inseminated. What the hell? What's going on with this woman? What is in her? She's an only child. Does that have anything to do with it?
Everything has something to do with it. The issue is how relevant is it? You know, obviously, one of the things we see in children who sometimes have kids is that it's a way of giving birth to themselves, having something to love, being needed. There's motives for children that sometimes result in pregnancies that prevent the parent from really seeing the child for who that child is in terms of their temperament and who they are, because they exist solely for the parent. So, you know, the issue of celebrity and the fact that these days, in order to get attention, you have to do things which are more and more outrageous in order to end up on talk shows, you know, results in all types of outlandish behavior. So, you know, and Donna could speak to this. There's, you know, it is hard to understand at times these motivations without necessarily talking to someone.
Okay, Donna Kaufman. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Doctor. Please finish.
No, go ahead, Donna, please.
Donna, weigh in on Octomom, please.
Well, I don't know what the word is for 14. It's not octo, because she's way beyond octo.
Yes, she is.
I will remind everyone of Melissa Elizabeth Lucio of Texas, who was also a mother of 14. She's on death row now for killing a child, her 2.5-year-old kid who she beat to death. But I don't see anything good in Octo's future.
I really don't.
And every time someone like Dr. Drew reaches out and helps her out, and Susie Orman tries to clean up her finances, and she rejects all the good help around her. And most importantly to me, she doesn't get her damn tubes tied. When they were out in there messing around, taking out all those children, why mm-hmm. didn't they just cut her fallopian tubes, you know? Until she does that, she's on my permanent you-know-what list.
Mm-hmm.
And I fear gravely for those the safety of those kids.
I do, too.
I thought that we were going to get somewhere a couple weeks ago when the hairdresser dropped the dime and called in children's services and the cops. It didn't end up in anything. But people keep bailing this woman out,
mm-hmm.
and that I would prefer that the children be taken from her now so that they're allowed to have some bonding time. The other thing, I have a wild theory here, and I can't substantiate it with anything except when I eyeball the doctor, Dr. Camerata, who was
mm-hmm.
the, you know, the fertility doctor,
right.
He looks a lot to me like her children. And
ooh.
He worked on all 14 of these kids, and he was the one who allowed her to not have selective termination, which is
mm-hmm.
usually done when you're giving a litter.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Somebody talked her into, or she decided on her own, I'm not sure, not to have a reasonable birth. She only wanted one. She got eight, and they all took.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they need to test this guy and see if he's the sperm donor because
that would be very
if he's
unethical.
Not, then,
yeah.
Then so be it. But if he is, he would not be the first fertility doctor who has fertilized his
That's
own patient.
That's right.
And
right.
Then there's his insurance policy and there's the money that, she, you know, let's be honest here, she needs
mm-hmm.
money and the kids need money. And if she admits that he's the sperm donor or if he did it without her knowing it, and that can be proven so easily,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, there's an income avenue here.
That she could get some income from him. Well, I don't think we'll see the last of Octomom. But anyway, if you want to talk to Octomom, just Google her name, and if you have money to waste and burn like that, give it to me first before you give it to Octomom. I'll
yeah,
talk to you
exactly.
for half price. Well, you know what? We're going to have to wrap it up here, everybody, but Donna Kaufman, true crime author, tell us the name of your book again. It is called...
The first one with Casey Anthony in it and Michael Jackson mm-hmm. is called, the most recent one, I should say, From Crime Scene to Courtroom. The one before that with the deaths of Danielle Van Damme, Stephanie Crow, which is back in the news, and
mm-hmm.
Anna Nicole Smith and her son and some others. That is A Question of Murder, and they're both on Amazon.
Fantastic books. I would highly recommend you get them. And Dr. Glenn Lipsom, thank you so much. You are so patient and so wonderful. Forensic psychologist, tell us the name of your website, please.
Okay, the one that is trying to prevent child sexual misconduct in schools is makingrightchoices.com. And the university where I teach is Alliant International University, and we basically have a clinical forensic program where we help train people to do what I do through Alliant International University. And
And you know that website, and you do it so well, Doctor. Thank you. We're going to have you both on again really soon. Happy Mother's Day to you both. Thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you again, I'm sure, very, very soon on Web Sleuths Radio. Thank you so much. Wow, Kimster, what a show, huh?
Yeah, it was really interesting.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, we could stay, but, you know, my son wants me to have some dinner tonight, some Chinese, you know.
Well,
so,
that's good. You know, when my son today, he said, Mom, you can watch whatever you want, and I won't bug you about it. I'm like, now that's a big deal. We usually have a nonstop argument about TV. I want to watch a chick flick, and he wants to watch stuff that blows up. So it's, you know, anyway, that's my big Mother's Day present. But we have a very, very interesting hot cold case on Web Sleuths. Kimster, why don't you tell us about it?
Yes, we do. But before I get started, just like I did to you last week, I did want to mention we do have a mother in Australia. We might have someone arrested in that case, and that's Alison Baden Clay in Australia. It is our featured hot case this week. You can see that on www.websleuths.com. But I just want to let you know the news that they think that they might have an arrest this week, and it's been a pretty hot case.
Wow.
So keep your eyes open for that arrest. Yeah. Okay, now to our hot cold case, and that is about Anita Price, who is missing from West Virginia, and she's been missing since 1974. She is not only a missing mother, Tricia, but over the years she has become a missing grandmother and missing great-grandmother. Anita Price was last seen around 8:45 p.m. when she left to go to work at the Flamingo Club in Benwood, West Virginia, on May 30th of 1974. She was wearing yellow shorts and a blue top, but she never arrived at work and was never seen again. The vehicle she was driving belonged to her boyfriend, and it was an early 1970s green color Sportabout, which is actually a four-door Gremlin. Don't know if you remember those.
My brother had one, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, those were cute little cars. Mm-hmm. She was driving a green one. And she, if you saw her, she could be identified by the distinctive burn scars on her left arm and torso from a fire she was in when she was some kind of a burn from 9 years old. I can't remember if it was actually a fire, but she was burned badly at the age of nine. The vehicle she had been driving was discovered the next morning after she went missing, sitting along West Virginia Route 2, which is the major north-south route along the Ohio River between Moundsville and Wheeling, West Virginia. There was no evidence of a struggle, although some of her cosmetics, including her lipstick and eyeliner, were laying on the seat of the car. Anita's disappearance was not reported to police for 3 days. Anita had been going through a divorce, and there was a custody battle for her two children. Those of you who researched unidentified remains, please bear in mind that Anita is 6 feet tall. And
wow.
The burns from her unique unidentified remains. Uh-huh. And the burns from her childhood could be apparent in the bone structure of her remains. So keep that in mind when you're researching unidentifieds. And to learn more about Anita's case, of course, you can go to www.websleuths.com and go to the upper right-hand portion of the page where you will see a box that includes a link to her case.
And that is
our hot cold case, and I really hope that this will be the week that she is found for all those children, grandchildren, and her great grandchild.
It would be a tragic Mother's Day, but certainly one that the family needs is to find this woman and our missing hot cold case. And Kim Sir, thank you. You handle the missing hot cold cases so well. Every week you always come up with something that is very interesting and yet something that we all need to concentrate on. So thank you, Kim Sir. You have a wonderful Mother's Day. You are a great mom to many kids and to many kids on Web Sleuths as well. We consider you like a mom. So you go enjoy that Chinese food, my dear, okay? And I'm going to go wait, make my son watch a chick flick just because I can, because it's Mother's Day. So everybody, thank you for joining us in the chat room. Again, please be patient with us on websleuths.com. We're experiencing technical difficulties. We do have the real smart people on it, not me. The real smart people that know what they're doing are working night and day to get it all fixed. So just be patient with us. And of course, join us next week for Web Sleuths Radio, where we talk about true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everyone.